The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI.
Welcome to the deep dive. Have you ever noticed how often we see that clash? You know, the scientist versus the believer in movies, news headlines. It feels like this constant battle.
It really does. It's almost the default assumption, isn't it, that science and religion are just locked in this endless, unavoidable war.
Exactly. And that's why we're diving into Thomas Dixon's Science and Religion, a very short introduction today, because, well, he challenges that whole idea.
It really does. That narrative, that warfare story, it's incredibly powerful. But Dixon argues, and this is the core of the book, that this idea of a perpetual conflict, it's basically a modern myth. A powerful one, sure, but historically not really accurate.
Wow. Okay. A myth. So the big fight we all assume has been going on forever. Might be, what, a recent thing? Relatively speaking, yes. And that's our goal today, really. To get past that simple conflict idea, Dixon gives us the tools, the historical context, to understand the much more complex reality underneath.
Which seems pretty vital, right? I mean, these debates pop up everywhere. Politics, education, even just figuring out your own views.
Absolutely. We need better ways to talk about this. Ways that aren't just picking sides in a supposed war. So the author guiding us here is Thomas Dixon. He's a professor of history, specializes in the history of science, philosophy, and religion, places like Queen Mary University of London, King's College London.
And what's really interesting you mentioned is his perspective. He's not coming in as a scientist defending science or a theologian defending religion. He's a historian.
Exactly. Think of him as a historical detective. His job isn't to win an argument for one side. It's to understand the past on its own terms. To see how these ideas actually developed.
So his authority isn't based on, like, having the definitive scientific or religious answer, but on digging into the historical evidence.
Precisely. He meticulously traces when this conflict idea really took hold, why it did, and crucially, who was pushing it. He treats the conflict story itself as something to be studied historically.
Which suggests it wasn't just always there. It was constructed.
That's the core argument. It's a story with authors, a time, and a purpose.
Okay, let's get into that central idea then. Dixon talks about a fundamental mistake we make, anachronism, applying modern ideas to the past where they just don't fit. How does that play out here?
It's absolutely central. We take our current quite rigid definition science, meaning, you know, secular, professional, empirical work, often seen as value-free, and religion as this distinct private belief system.
Right. Separate boxes.
Separate boxes, exactly. And we try to force historical figures and periods into those boxes. We look back at someone from the 17th century and ask, was he a scientist or a religious thinker?
And Dixon's saying that's the wrong question.
It's fundamentally the wrong question for much of history. What we call science used to be natural philosophy. And for centuries, for many key thinkers, think medieval scholars, figures in the scientific revolution studying nature wasn't separate from theology. It was often part of it.
How so?
It was seen as a way to understand God. Nature was considered God's other book alongside scripture. Studying the creation was a way to grasp the creator's wisdom, his power, his design. The idea that these were opposing forces would have seemed, well, bizarre to many of them.
So natural philosophy and theology weren't enemies. They were often partners or even the same pursuit.
In many contexts, yes. Deeply integrated. Dixon traces how that integration eventually fractured, leading to the conflict narrative we're so familiar with today.
Okay, let's unpack that fracture. If they were integrated for so long, how did this conflict myth get started? You said it was invented. Who did the inventing?
Dixon points primarily to the late 19th century, especially in America. Two key figures and their books really cemented this narrative. John William Draper, with his History of the Conflict Between Religion and Science.
It doesn't leave much doubt about his view.
Not at all. And Andrew Dixon White's A History of the Warfare of Science with Theology in Christendom. Again, the titles tell you everything.
Warfare. Wow.
And here's the crucial part Dixon highlights. These guys weren't writing objective history. They were writing polemics. They had contemporary agendas.
What kind of agendas?
Well, things like professionalizing science. Carving out a space for science as an independent cultural authority, separate from the clergy, who often dominated universities. Promoting secular education. White, for instance, was Cornell University's first president and was pushing for a non-sectarian approach.
Oh, okay. So the history they wrote, this epic battle stretching back centuries, it was actually a tool for their own 19th century goals, to win contemporary arguments about who should run universities and define knowledge.
That's exactly Dixon's point. The warfare narrative tells us a lot about 19th century ambitions and cultural politics, but it tells us surprisingly little, or even misleads us, about what was actually happening in, say, the 16th or 17th centuries.
That's quite a reversal. The history we often take for granted was shaped by a specific, relatively recent power struggle.
It is a major reversal. And it gets even more interesting, maybe ironic, when Dixon suggests that, far from holding science back, Christian theology actually provided some of the crucial philosophical groundwork for modern science to emerge in the first place.
Wait, how does that work? That seems totally counterintuitive based on the conflict myth. Theology helping science.
It sounds strange to us now, but think about it from the perspective of medieval and early modern thinkers. Belief in a single, rational, law-giving God monotheism fostered certain assumptions about the universe.
Like what?
Well, first, that the universe wasn't chaotic or ruled by capricious spirits. It was orderly, coherent, governed by consistent laws, because it was a creation of a rational God. And second, if humans were made in God's image, then the human mind had the capacity to understand that rational order.
Okay, I see. So that worldview gives you permission, even encouragement, to systematically study nature, expecting to find reliable patterns and laws.
Precisely. It legitimizes the whole enterprise of natural philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't seen as challenging God, but as exploring his handiwork.
Right. Okay, but what about the famous clashes, the ones always cited as proof of the conflict? We have to talk about Galileo, the story everyone knows. Brilliant scientist with his telescope, persecuted by a backward church afraid of the truth.
That's the myth, absolutely. And Dixon doesn't deny there was a conflict, but he shows it was vastly more complicated than just science versus dogma. A huge part of it was about authority, yes. Specifically, who had the authority to interpret the Bible? Was it the church hierarchy and its theologians? Or could a natural philosopher like Galileo, using his observations, reinterpret scripture? That was a massive point of contention.
So it was also about power, church politics, especially during the Counter-Reformation.
Exactly. And Dixon also points out, maybe controversially, that Galileo's own personality didn't help. He was apparently quite abrasive, undiplomatic, mocked powerful figures that definitely fanned the flames. It wasn't just about the scientific findings.
It's never just one thing, is it?
Rarely. And contrast Galileo with Isaac Newton, arguably an even bigger scientific figure. Newton was profoundly religious, deeply so. He saw his laws of physics not as disproving God, but as revealing God's ongoing active power in the universe. Discovering those laws was, for him, a deeply pious act.
Mm-hmm.
Science and theology were utterly intertwined.
So for Newton, no conflict at all. Integration.
Yeah.
Okay, the other huge figure always brought up is Darwin. Evolution. The story is, Darwin publishes Origin of Species, kills God, and religious leaders immediately freak out and declare war.
And again, Dixon shows the reality was far messier and more interesting. Yes, there was opposition. But there was also significant acceptance and even enthusiasm from many prominent religious leaders, especially initially.
Really? Like who?
People like Frederick Temple, who later became Archbishop of Canterbury, or the writer Charles Kingsley. They didn't see evolution as contradicting God. They saw it as revealing a grander, more sublime method of creation than just instantaneous poofing things into existence.
So God working through natural laws over vast timescales was seen as more impressive in a way?
For many, yes. A more majestic way for God to operate. The really intense, polarized, fundamentalist creationism versus evolution battle that we see so much today. Dixon argues that's largely a later development, particularly a 20th century American phenomenon. It wasn't the universal immediate reaction in 1859.
That's fascinating. The timeline gets compressed in the popular myth.
Completely. And then Dixon brings us to perhaps the most ironic twist, the Big Bang Theory.
Right. How does that fit in?
Well, the scientist who first proposed the core idea that the universe expanded from an initial super-dense state, a primeval atom, was Georges Lemaître.
And Lemaître was?
Not only a brilliant physicist, but also a Catholic priest.
Get out! A priest came up with the Big Bang.
The foundational concept, yes. And here's the kicker. When his theory started gaining ground, some secular scientists were initially quite skeptical. Why? Because a universe with a definite beginning sounded suspiciously like the religious doctrine of creatio ex nihilo, creation out of nothing. It had uncomfortable theological echoes for some scientists who preferred the idea of an eternal, unchanging universe.
So it completely flips the script. You have a priest proposing a major scientific cosmology, and some secular scientists resisting, partly because it sounded too religious.
Exactly. It totally undermines the simple conflict narrative. History is just way more complicated and surprising.
Okay, so pulling back from these specific cases, Dixon gives us some key themes or, like, tools for thinking about this better. The first big one you mentioned is avoiding that anachronism trap.
Yes, absolutely critical. Stop imposing our modern categories of science and religion onto the past. Ask how historical figures themselves understood the relationship between studying nature, natural philosophy, and theology. Use their terms, understand their context.
That immediately makes things more nuanced.
Instantly. The second theme is appreciating the adaptive nature of theology. Religious thought isn't just this static, brittle thing that shatters when it meets new knowledge.
It can evolve, integrate new ideas.
History shows it often has. Think about 19th century geology revealing deep time, an earth vastly older than a literal reading of Genesis might suggest. Many geologists then were clergymen. They didn't just throw up their hands. They developed interpretations like the day-age theory or the gap theory to reconcile scripture with the scientific evidence.
So intellectual work, adaptation, integration, not just blind rejection.
Right. It shows theology can be a dynamic intellectual tradition. And that leads to the third point, moving beyond conflict as the only model. Dixon outlines different ways science and religion can relate.
What are they?
He talks about conflict, sure, but also independence. They operate in separate realms. Dialogue, they can talk to each other, learn from each other, and integration. They can be unified, like in Newton's view.
And the point is?
The point is that history shows examples of all these models at different times with different people. Conflict isn't the inevitable default mode. It's just one possibility among several. Which one dominates often depends more on cultural factors than on inherent logic.
That's really helpful. Okay, let's talk about some memorable takeaways. The book crystallizes things so well. For me, the absolute core is that statement. The idea of a perennial and inevitable conflict between science and religion is a 19th century invention, not a historical reality.
That one line just changes the whole game, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It puts the burden of proof back on those who insist on conflict today. Why that model, given the history?
Yeah. And then for Galileo, boiling it down, the Galileo affair was more a conflict over who had the authority to interpret the Bible than it was a battle between scientific observation and religious dogma. It reminds you historical events are multi-causal.
Exactly. Never simple. And looking back further, capturing that older integrated view, for centuries, the study of natural philosophy was considered a branch of theology, a way of studying the wisdom and power of God through his creation. That explains figures like Newton so much better than our modern categories do.
So how do we use all this? What are the real life applications? For me, the big one is just critical thinking. When you hear a debate instantly framed as science versus religion, pause.
Yes. Ask. Who benefits from framing it that way? Is it really that simple?
Yeah.
What complexity, what history, what other possible relationships are being ignored or erased by just shouting conflict?
It feels like it could really improve public conversations, couldn't it? If we move away from this warfare language in areas like, say, bioethics or environmental policy.
Absolutely. Those areas desperately need both scientific understanding and reflection on values, ethics, meaning things often associated with religious or philosophical traditions. Dixon's approach allows for vocabulary of complexity, dialogue, maybe even integration instead of just battle lines.
And on a personal level. For someone maybe struggling with feeling they have to choose between, I don't know, their faith and their love of science.
I think Dixon's work is incredibly liberating. It shows that feeling of conflict isn't some necessary burden you have to carry. It shows you're part of a long, rich tradition of thinkers who saw no inherent contradiction, who actively integrated reason and faith, study of nature and theology. It validates seeking that integrated worldview. So I'm going to pick one final takeaway. It's that simple stories are seductive, but usually misleading, especially in history. Dixon helps us trade that simplistic conflict framework for a much richer, messier, and ultimately more accurate complexity framework.
Yeah, for me, the biggest surprise was probably that Big Bang story, Lemaître the priest, the secular skepticism. Mm. It just perfectly illustrates how backwards our assumptions can be. The historical reality doesn't fit neatly into our modern boxes at all.
It really doesn't. And that's the lasting lesson, I think. Intellectual humility. A deep suspicion of easy dichotomies. The relationship between ways of knowing the world, whether you call them science, religion, philosophy, it's this incredibly complex, evolving tapestry. We're much better off trying to appreciate its richness than just trying to tear it into two warring sides.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.